We made this.
Hello, Doctor. Welcome to the end of your existence.
A dozen of the world's leading seismologists have gone missing. 15 of the world's most valuable paintings have disappeared.
Can I let you in on a little secret?
A Dalek incursion on Earth is imminent.
Has it never occurred to you that it could be a trap?
This isn't a day. You are erased forever. Bit of a conversation stopper.
It's incredibly dangerous.
This is a really bad idea.
Anything could happen. I don't want it to
end. Welcome to the TARDIS Crew, a Doc 2 podcast for the We Made This podcast network. I'm Baz Green, and I'm joined, as usual, by my son, Ben, the biggest Doc 2 fan this side of Gallifrey. How are you today, Ben?
Yeah, pretty good.
Recording this in the evening, on a Monday evening, no less.
Yeah, so today we are discussing the Centenary Special and Jodie Whittaker's last episode as the 13th Doctor, The Power of the Doctor. So, as we're recording it, we've had 24 hours almost for it to kind of settle in. How are you feeling generally about the episode we watched last night?
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Like, you'll probably know by now, I'm not the greatest fan this era. But honestly, that episode, I really, really enjoyed. Like, Chibnall, he really excelled there and went out on a high. And looking around, it seems a lot of the fandom agrees with that, even the people who didn't love this era as much.
I think that's it. There's been such a positive reaction to The Power of the Doctor. I mean, I again, had a great time. Obviously, that's a part of today's episode. We are going to break down the episode and talk in detail about all the things that happened in the special. But yeah, I had a big smile on my face a lot of the time. And while there were things that maybe didn't make sense and so there's certainly ups and downs. There were certainly more ups and downs than this. I think that's generally the consensus, looking online as well, looking on our Discord chat, and we made this as well. People are generally reacting very positively to this episode.
Yeah, and that's really nice to see, like, because this era is very maligned, but also very much loved at the same time. It's quite anomalous, really. So it is nice to see, like, its last contribution, really, go out on a high. In what feels to me as Chris Chibnall going, "Oh, well, I've never been able to do a Doctor Who anniversary, so F it, we're starting the 60th now."
It is a big celebration of Doctor Who. I mean, I think that's because obviously The Power of the Doctor came out as part of the BBC's centenary celebrations. There is a very celebratory tone about the episode. I think that's what's so appealing about it.
Yeah, well, I remember Chibnall was saying, like, he wanted this to encompass the past, present and future of Doctor Who, and it certainly does that.
Absolutely.
The past in more ways than I expected, honestly.
Oh, yeah, but we're obviously going to get into all the cameos and the returning faces. I mean, there was a lot to love as a Doctor Who fan of the whole of Doctor Who, not just modern Doctor Who as well. You know, there were lots of callbacks to classic Doctor Who, more overt than others, and yeah, it was generally a celebration of Doctor Who.
Yeah, especially as the 60th seems more likely if we're getting any Doctors back other than Tennant. It'll probably be Smith and do more New Who celebratory, a bit like how Day of the Doctor ended up sort of doing. So this very much feels as well like the classic Who version of the celebration.
Well, I mean, I never thought I'd actually hear myself saying this, but in a way, I kind of feel like Chris Chibnall has stolen a little bit of the 60th anniversary celebration thunder with this episode. There's so much in it which is about the love of Doctor Who going all the way back to 1963. You know, all the old faces we saw, It just, this felt like an anniversary episode. It had the kind of enthusiasm of, say, the Five Doctors in it. It was definitely that kind of dynamic about the episode, which felt like if this had been released on the 60th anniversary, I actually would have been happy.
Yeah, I think so too, especially because it also just allows Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill to go out on a high as well.
Yeah, definitely. Let's briefly talk about a lead up to The Power of Doctor. We are going to do a little bit of a post-mortem on Chris Chibnall's Doctor Who at the end of this discussion as well, just to kind of reflect our closing thoughts as we move on to the return of Russell T. Davis. But I'm thinking back to our last discussion that we had with Craig on Legend of the Sea Devils. Wasn't really well regarded at all. Either Daleks was fine. Flux was very much a kind of had ups and downs. And I think generally that there is this sense that it's been a bit of a struggle. And it's kind of flipped from either too slow to too over the top and like everything but the kitchen sink thrown into Doctor Who with Chibnall's Doctor Who. And Jodie Whittaker, while being a good doctor, has suffered from some very mediocre scripts, the very convoluted scripts.
Mm. Like Doctor Who hasn't, I don't know, really had the sense of fun like this since, honestly, mid-Capaldi, maybe?
Mm. I don't know. I kind of thought it was a lot of fun in some of the stuff with Bill in his final season.
Oh, yeah. Well, that is a really fun series. But you've also got a lot of slightly darker toned, like, yeah. Thin Ice, Pyramid at the End of the World, the finale,
yeah.
Lie of the Land, Extremis.
But, I mean, there was certainly a bit of sense of fun in some stories, like the Witchfinders of Kablam, maybe, in Joe Whittaker's first season. But and I guess in the second season, you know, Nicola Tissot, Light of Terror, Fugitive of the Jadoon, there were some kind of big, bolshy episodes. But it's kind of all at the same time gone really kind of complex and convoluted. And I think we'll come back to this and we'll talk about the kind of series arc and things like the Tarmish Children, whether they worked at the end of this. But it's all got a little bit over the top, but also a little bit grim, particularly with Flux. And I kind of felt that, yeah, again, the magic was missing. And I think looking at The Power Doctor, there were things that were very, very Chibnall. In the sense, like, the core thing with the volcanoes, for example, don't think it made a hell of a lot of sense. But, you know, we'll go into more detail later on. But there were things that were big and over the top and was kind of very flashy but lacked a lot of substance. But there was a lot of stuff in this episode which had a lot of heart and some really good character work. The sort of stuff that, you know, Chris Chibnall, coming off Broadchurch, can do really good character work. And I remember thinking that among those first couple of Jodie Whittaker episodes way back in 2018, that, yeah, just get the dates right, it's been a while, that we were going to get that kind of detailed level of really good, strong character work that we saw maybe in like the first couple of episodes of Jodie Whittaker's first series. But then it all seemed to go. And yet in this one, there were moments with companions. Obviously, we know Ace and Tegan were in this. There was some lovely stuff there with Kate as well. And with the Doctor herself, you know, I'm just thinking, you know, favourite moments. Things like the ice cream, them sitting eating ice cream on the task at the end was lovely. It was a lovely piece of kind of character work between a companion and a Doctor. Things that I kind of really felt were missing up to this point.
Yeah, no, I do see what you're getting at there, especially with 13 and Yaz, because a lot of their big dynamic, I think, like just the two of them, has been completely off-screen. It's like in a gap between Revolution of the Daleks and Flux, really.
Yeah, no, I definitely kind of felt it here. So let's get into the episode and break a bit more down then. So let's start with the very big action-packed sequence with the Cybermen on the bullet train in space. What did you think of the opening sequence?
Yeah, I quite liked it. It, in a way, it reminded me slightly of the opening of Time of the Doctor, in just the sense of, I don't know, I don't quite know how to describe it, but just sort of starting, there's a ship, there's some Cybermen shooting, and just as if you're entering this big thing which you don't realise is going to be such a big thing. I don't quite know how to describe it.
I think it certainly throws you into the action. It was very, very Flux in style, I think. We're just going smack bang straight into the action there, not really giving the audience time to breathe. It was a fun sequence, though. I thought it was fun. As much as I hate what's been done with Gallifrey, and we'll come on to that later, I do really love the design of the kind of the Cybermasters. Yeah, the Cybermasters. They're down to the kind of the Gallifreyan designs and the kind of weird, like, spiky shoulder pieces they had in this one as well.
I think they had those a bit in Series 12 as well, but that was more than the normal ones with, like, their legs.
Yeah, so there was they look great, and I think it was a fun action, high-stakes opener. Yeah, with the Doctor, Yaz, and Dan going down the rope ladder onto the speed and train as well. It was fun. Did it have a lot of substance? Not really. I did love Dan as the kind of calling out to the passengers about the trial being caused as well. That was fun.
Yeah, well, that reminded me of an audio I listened to the other day. Already, how many minutes in are we?
We are 10 minutes in and we've had our first big finish tangent.
I'm sorry, but it's just a scene with Daleks on a supermarket intercom, so I just got reminded of that. But yeah, I think this whole scene mainly was just there to provide Dan with an exit, because I think John Bishop was quite busy filming his own stuff at this point, so they just kind of wanted to get Dan out of the way.
Right, so let's talk about that, because, I mean, I was surprised that immediately after the big opening, Dan essentially says goodbye and leaves the TARDIS at that point.
Well, I mean, he was almost shot and killed.
He was, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the thing is, a lot of the fandom had correctly predicted bullet train at the start, Dan has near-death experience, wants to leave. And, yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was fine. I've got to say, John Bishop was fine as Dan. I didn't dislike Dan as a character. I like some of the dynamic, particularly in Eve of the Daleks, some of the dynamic with Yaz and Dan, and Yaz being the more mature companion. But I kind of go back to what I was saying back in Flux. Why didn't you just have Yaz and the Doctor? You know, have for the first time ever an all-female TARDIS team, which is a very unique Doctor. We've never had that before. But also, I think the focus on Dan took away from some of the Yaz Doctor stuff that was kind of needed. We got bits of it, but he said it kind of felt like a lot of stuff happened off screen. So I kind of ultimately look at Dan and go, what was the point of the character?
Yeah, honestly, I don't know if there is one. It almost feels like Chibnall just wanted to just have another Graham.
I mean, I get wanting to never have another companion and, you know, shake things up. You know, the Doctor will always have more than one companion usually. So it kind of very, very traditional Doctor in the sense that, you know, a companion or companions leave and another one joins the TARDIS as well. So, you know, that worked and Dan was fine. But I just kind of felt like there was a missed opportunity with having more, you know, not having more of a focus on the Doctor and Yaz.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's done now. We can't really have that change. But
that's why we're having this discussion, Ben. Yeah. We're digesting what happened.
Yes,
you know, and,
true. I mean, I guess if the Daleks and Legend of Sea Devils and this kind of did what they could with 13 and Yaz, because, like, I don't know, started off the Thousand-Man stuff and Dan was more in the background in Sea Devils. He's barely in this, but obviously this has a lot to do.
I liked that at the core focus of the episode, it was Yaz and Doctor together. It was kind of the TARDIS team that we should have had, even though you have, obviously, Ace and Tegan and the others kind of working around there as well. I liked the focus on Yaz and the Doctor, and I think it certainly gave Mandip Gill a last big hurrah as well. I don't think she's been massively served as a companion. In the same way I think Jodie Whittaker was a Doctor, I think there's been stuff attempted with her, stuff with the mental health in the second series, the whole thing about being a trainee policewoman kind of just went by the wayside as well.
To be fair, that makes sense considering real life events. They kind of just had to scrap that.
Yeah, I get that. And I liked her role as a slightly more kind of senior companion in Flux and the other episodes. And obviously there has been stuff. I see what Chibnall was doing, particularly with that kind of speech at the end of Eve of the Daleks, with the kind of the audience had picked up on this idea of his potential romance between Yaz and the Doctor, and he played into that a bit. But then I think it's pretty much just non-existent in this episode. There's a closeness to them, but I think the idea of the romantic relationship seems to have completely gone in The Power of the Doctor.
To be fair, I think that does fit with the end of Legend of the Sea Devils, when the Doctor's like, this isn't going to be able to happen, so we just kind of just do what we can.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. But Let's get into the episodes themselves. So let's start with the... obviously, let's get into the kind of core of the episode then, after the big action-packed opening and Dan's departure then. So you've got a number of plot threads here, very, very kind of very flux in style. The first half of The Power of the Doctor felt like flux, and then it all kind of came together for me, I thought. But so you start with the return of Sophie Aldred as Ace and Janet Fielden as Tegan. What did you think of their returns?
Yeah, I mean, that's been something we've been looking forward to. It was just great to see them back. I've seen a few criticisms of Janet Fielding's performance in this episode, although I think it is worth noting that basically after she left the role of Tegan in 1984, she essentially just quit acting. She hasn't done it for like 38 years.
Okay.
Well, other than Big Finish.
Yes, obviously Big Finish there. And this is actually not a tangent. Yeah, they've obviously, both Janet Fielding and Sophie Aldred, I think...
And a lot of cast members in this episode.
Yeah, I've done Big Finish.
And I think, two are imminent.
Definitely, yeah. Yes, we'll go into that as well. But I don't know. I thought Sophie Aldred was amazing. Ace was absolutely ace in this episode. I'm sure I'm not the only person saying that. I loved Sophie Aldred in this episode. We watched... Survivor recently, and we discussed it on our last episode of the TARDIS crew as well. And she just, I know she's been playing Ace a lot on Big Finish, but Sophie Aldred was just had that kind of enthusiastic charm and gumption of Ace that we remembered from the 80s Doctor Who. And I loved her. I thought she was great. I thought she had some really great material to work from. I desperately want to see Ace return. I'm hoping, as we'll get onto it and stuff, particularly around the new units, that we might see Ace again, hopefully. I hope Rossi Davis has a hand, potentially, in some of the stuff with Tegan and Ace in this episode, which might tie into his era. I thought Sophie Aldred was amazing. We'll get into more scenes later. I thought Janet Fielden, and maybe what you said about the acting, I wasn't convinced. I thought some of the earlier scenes with Janet Fielden, I wasn't convinced. They didn't really work for me. But then when it got to her speech to Kate about, you know, having survived two husbands and trial and the globe and the sun and all that stuff, that was a great speech. And I thought that was finally Tegan, kind of, as I remembered her.
Yeah, the two husbands thing. That's not made a lot of the fandom happy. Because for those who don't know, there's like a ship of Nyssa and Tegan, which Russell T Davies then canonised in Sarah Jane Adventures. So people were a bit annoyed when it seemed like that was just going to be completely decanonized. Although people are also picking up on the fact she said she had two husbands. Doesn't mean she can't be with Nyssa now. So,
wow.
Although, the way Big Finish left her, there is a really not high chance of them being able to stay.
I think, slight tangent, I'm sure Nyssa, as we saw in the recent War Doctor episode, which was amazing, the War Doctor story that she was in. Yeah. Her fate was kind of very much on the air. As was Joe's, though.
The War Master.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah. The War Master. And, but again, same with Joe. We did see Joe at the end of this episode.
To be fair, I don't think that's the end of Joe. End of Nyssa technically can't work because of another series they've done with Nyssa.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway.
Anyway, tangent over. I thought Sophie Aldred was great. Janet Fielding, I felt like she was struggling. Maybe it's dialogue, and I think, in fairness, you know, Chris Chibnall does write some clunky dialogue. Certainly Jodie Whittaker has suffered from some clunky dialogue. And there were some things where I thought, even Sophie Aldred occasionally seemed to struggle a little bit with what she had to work from in the earlier scenes as well. Very expositioning about the missing patents and the seismologists and their, you know, the line, it's been 40 years for me since I last saw the Doctor, oh, 3 decades for me, or whatever that was. It kind of felt like I could see how when Chris Chibnall was writing that bit of dialogue, I was thinking, oh, that's really great. And I don't think it really came across as effectively on screen for me with their performances, but I think that was some of the clunky dialogue. But I think Aldred was stronger. But when Tegan really kind of got a gumption in the second half of the episode from that speech onwards, and when she was obviously trying to deactivate the sidebin later on, then I kind of felt like, oh yeah, this is starting to feel like the Tegan I remember from the Fifth Doctor era.
Yeah, I mean, there were fears I had going into this that Chibnall would just decide to kill Tegan, and then once like they were on the roof and Tegan was like, no, I'm going to remain hind, and then the shutters shut, I thought, oh, well, that's it for her then. But no, we're good.
Yeah, I'm glad they didn't kill off Tegan, absolutely.
It was either her or Kate, people were fearing.
Well, There was a point with the potentially, I was going to say assimilation, that's the Borg, but you know, the cyber conversion.
Same as her father.
We're not going to talk about the cyber brigadier thing is saying that I don't think really worked, but you know, there are certainly people I know that are particularly angry about that, but we'll move on from that. But there, yeah, certainly we've later on, we are jumping around a little bit. There was that moment when Kate was almost converted. I actually thought Kate was a goner at that point. What do you think then of the idea of, after the whole kerfuffle with the Grand Serpent in Flux, which I still don't really know what that was about, and obviously it trashed some unit continuity, but putting that aside, we see Kate now having rebuilt unit, and what do you think of the idea of bringing back kind of former companions as contractors to work for unit?
Yeah, I think that works really well, because it makes sense for something they do. Although I was slightly confused, like, where's Osgood at this point? Like, is she around? Or for that matter, where's the Big Finish team? Come on, she has a whole unit of them. But yeah, no, I think it does work quite well, like, who's on file, like, I mean, some of the companions basically originated from UNIT. Like, that's where he met Sarah Jane. That's where Harry and Joe came from. Mm. And Liz. And actually, basically, that's where the Pertwee Year companion.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, even Sarah was connected, wasn't she? And obviously then later on, Martha Jones was part of UNIT as well. I was hoping Martha was going to be in that group at the end, actually, given the connections. But hey, that's... Maybe later on. But, I do wonder if this is Russell T Davies' hand in the future of Doctor Who. You know, there were talks at the time, weren't there, of bringing Sophie Aldred into the Sarah Jane Adventures before Elizabeth Sladen died.
Oh.
So I wonder if maybe the next spin-off is the kind of former companions working with kind of with UNIT. That'd be a great spin-off. I don't think you could do that really, really
well.
It's
either that or an Ace spin-off, I think.
Yeah. I think general consensus after that. Even people who haven't watched, there was, on the We Mere This Discord, Matt, who was on a couple of episodes with us previously as well, saying he really liked Ace. He not watched the Ace classic Doctor Who episodes, but he really liked Ace, and I think people really connected with her as a character. And for those of us who have watched kind of the final two seasons of Sylvester McCoy's Doctor Who, seeing her with that jacket and the baseball bat was just a joy to watch. But I think a lot of new fans have connected with her, and I think they successfully brought back a companion that could easily take the place of the great Elizabeth Sladen as a new kind of classic companion with their own spin-off show.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess it continues the line, really, because, I don't know, there's probably quite a few iconic companions who, like, you can keep going through spin-offs with, which sounds really morbid when you think about it. Like, when the previous one dies, you just bring the next iconic companion in for a spin-off. I did not mean it to sound like this, but there we are.
Yeah, but I like the idea of the new rebuilt unit. Obviously gets completely trashed in the, well, this the London headquarters gets trashed in this episode by the Cybermen, and but obviously the idea of Ace and Tegan working with them is great, and I would love to see more of that. I hope we see both of them. As I said, while I thought Janet Fielden wasn't as strong as Sophie Aldred, I think when she started to find her feet later on, I think she was quite good towards the end. And I'd like to see them both, but I really, really want to see Sophie Aldred. And how even Yaz, you know, they've got a connection. If Mandip Gill wanted to continue in Doctor Who universe, and it could maybe the same way that Martha was in the kind of the very end of the David Tennant era, you know, she could find a role in this kind of new unit. I could absolutely see Yaz working with the new unit.
Yeah, that's definitely something. And considering she obviously knows Kate, and now she's with the companion support group.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, how has no one ever done that? Graham is a genius. He's just like, you know what? Wonder if there are other people, and just, boom, support group.
Yeah. We'll get on to Graham and the others later on. So what did you think of the mystery, then, of the stolen paintings and the missing seismologists? And then obviously then you have in 1916 you had the giant kind of cyber planet in the sky as well. What do you think of, were those mysteries enough of a hook for you as a viewer?
I mean, initially I was just like, oh, here we go, more messy Chibnall plot lines. But I think once you get to it, it does make sense tied together. The only thing I didn't quite get is the seismology Dalek volcano part. Like, the rest of it, I can see, like, the paintings are just there to draw the Doctor in, the planets used for the Master's plan, Rasputin, I guess, is so the Master has, probably just because he's really camp and just wants this great location decided. You know what? I should be Rasputin. I wonder if he actually is, or if he's just took the form. But, yeah, I don't quite get the volcano part. No. Like, Cybermen and Master works, but the Daleks didn't really need to be there.
Yeah, I don't know what the whole point of that plot was. Again, the whole thing with the mysteries, while it was a way, I guess, to get Ace and Tegan in, and I loved, you kind of saw it in the trailer, but I love when that kind of you went to the art museum and you knew that was Ace standing there even before the camera panned around to her face as well. But the paintings was like felt like a very throwaway MacGuffin that didn't really go anywhere. To be honest, I think the idea, I guess you had the Rasputin pictures to draw the Doctor to 1916. I guess that kind of worked.
Yeah, I think that was the point of the paintings, just deface them, get the Doctor's attention. It's the thing, the Master's done this kind of thing before.
Well, I was thinking that's kind of thing that would be very Moffat-y, but with, I don't know, maybe Moffat would just do it a little bit better. Well, he would have done it better. But I think maybe we're feeling a little bit more clever. But, oh, that's really cool. I think with the with Chibnall's script, the paintings were a little bit like, okay, I can kind of see where it's going. But maybe because there were too many things thrown in. I thought the planet was very, very cool. And I love the Rasputin stuff, which we'll get onto in a moment. But I still don't know, having watched the episode, and maybe I need to watch it again. And this is actually one of the first Jodie Whittaker episodes in a long time I really want to go back and watch a second time. That I don't know what the point of the Daleks and the volcanoes were. Why were they drilling into the volcanoes to, you know, it wasn't an invasion. They were trying to
I guess it was to something help Earth, like, have the energy from the cyber planet, like, channel into the Earth's core to help with things, I guess.
It was something to do about, maybe mining the planet or something, but...
Well, isn't that just Dalek invasion of Earth?
Yeah, and maybe that's what Chibnall was going for, but it got very, very muddled. And the best stuff with the Daleks and the volcanoes was Ace and Graham running around and with the superpowered bat bashing on the Daleks. I love that. But I don't really get what that was. I mean, to be honest, I thought the Daleks were superfluous to the story, if I'm going to be honest. I thought the Cyber Masters, they look cool. Yep, the whole Time Lord stuff aside, oh, they're really cool. Working with the Master, which is the continued theme going back to Missy now as well, I guess, with what happened in Death in Heaven as well. And I thought that was enough. I think the Cyber Masters, you know, now the Master has basically destroyed Gallifrey, converted a lot of Time Lords, made them his Cyber Masters, and is now enacting his plan. That was enough. The Daleks were just, I guess, in the same way as with Flux, another big spectacle that was just a lot of kind of gloss, but not really any depth to it.
Yeah, I mean, there was a cool idea with the Daleks, like the good one, which is like, oh, it felt a bit Rusty-like, but then it does have a really cool idea behind it, but it just wasn't able to be done full justice. Like, a Dalek that just naturally comes to the realisation that the Dalek cause is now just a corruption of what they were originally designed for, to survive as Khalid. Like, that's a nice take on the Daleks.
That was my favourite bit of the whole Dalek storyline.
And admittedly, like, the actual Daleks, knowing it would bring Doctor in, fair play to them. They were going along with it. Although, once the Doctor was captured, Yaz just ran back to the TARDIS. Did they not see her?
I mean, I guess the Daleks then capture the Doctor in the Dalek machine to transport her back to 1916 so she can meet the Master Rasputin. Again, it kind of works, but it feels like a massively convoluted plot just to transport the Doctor. I'm sure they can be a more effective way of doing it than just having all the Daleks in it as well.
Also, Vinda, he did not need to...
No,
there at all.
As much as Jacob Anderson is good as Vinda, I liked him in Flux, I liked him in this. I like his dynamic with Yaz and the Doctor. But what was the point? He crash lands on the planet, sees the the other TARDIS and then helps them out and then flies away at the end. I don't know what the point of Vinda was in this episode.
I guess it was to have a returning character from the Whittaker era, I guess. But to be fair, what was the whole point of Vinda in general? I guess moving on to the Master. I really like the stuff he has, like, on Earth, like, doing his little lecture. Oh,
I thought Sacha Dhawan was absolutely fantastic. My two favourite people in this whole thing were Ace and the Master. Particularly the Master. I mean, I've always really, really enjoyed Sacha Dhawan's Master. As much as I might have kind of had found faults with some stuff in the Chibnall era, one of my favourite things about the 13th Doctor's Doctor Who is Dhawan's Master. I think he is fantastic. And he was really, really having fun with this episode.
Yeah, like, just having his little lecture and then telling the Doctor, oh yeah, you're going to die. Ooh, UNIT! And then when he gets to UNIT, and he's just like, hi Deegan, shrunk your aunt. Hi Ace, you're stupid. Hi Kate, killed your father.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought the taunts and the callbacks, and last time I saw you were half a cat from Ace, yeah.
Well, people experiment. It basically got to the point where the Master just went, you were bad, Ace, and she just goes, no, you're a cat boy, and he just smirks, like, yes, I was. It's like that entire scene, the Master just wanted to be annoying.
Oh, I love the way he taunted Kate about the Brigadier, her father.
That was uncalled for, and yet he's still just like, oh, yeah, he was an idiot.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the Tegan's poor aunt, who, for those who don't know, she was shrunk by the Master, miniaturised by the Master in her very first episode. So they've got history with the Master, particularly Tegan. Tegan has a lot of history with the Master too. That was great. I love that. I mean, I just loved, you know, before the Rasputin stuff, which was so over the top, but so much fun, all the stuff with him being that kind of, doing that lecture and stuff, and the way he was kind of taunting the Doctor while also kind of playing off Yaz as well, I thought was great.
Yeah, and immediately, like, if you needed any reason to now go and pre-order the Sacha Dhawan Master spin-off from Big Finish, I'm doing their promotion for them at this point. To be fair, I've been doing that for years. But yeah, like, look at his performance here, and then he will just bring that to audio. Same with Jo Martin.
Yeah.
She's getting a series. Yay.
Absolutely. Looking forward to those. But I think even with Dhawan, I think it was so good that, again, people who maybe weren't as much a fan of his Master previously said that this the Master we saw in this episode was so good. They loved every minute of it.
Yeah, like, the fact he just brings back Ashad, clones him, and then it's basically like, escape the cell, bye, and then just goes back to do the Rasputin stuff. And he's like, him just being Rasputin just feels like he's doing that for a laugh. And then when he's like, oh yes, Doctor, I am going to force regenerate you. And then he just turns on the Rasputin song and just starts dancing.
Oh, I loved his Rasputin. And it was so Rusty Davis, John Sim Master. But it actually shouldn't have worked. It should have been, oh, you're trying to do a Rusty Davis type thing. In the same way that...
most of this era is.
Yeah. But even the same way that, as much as I wasn't a huge fan of John Timms' Master until Moffat wrote him later on in the 12th Doctor era. I like the overtop nature of the Master when he was kind of playing the pop music he was playing. What's the song he plays in Sound of Drums?
Oh, it's I know he plays in Last of the Time Lords, like the song I Can't Decide If You Should Live or Die, but that's like in I think that's only in the iPlayer version. Then he plays I forget what the one in Sound of Drums is. IMDb to the rescue.
Let's look at IMDb, because it's kind of... IMDb, Sound of Drums, it was...
Voodoo Child.
Voodoo Child, yes, that was it. I love when they did that. And again, the callback, and obviously Rasputin is a song. It is so ridiculous, so over the top. But it absolutely worked in this episode.
Yeah, like, as soon as I heard the song, I like turned to my mum and was like, do you actually get what this is? And she was like, no. And I was just like, oh, right, well, I had to explain it. Like, as soon as I heard it, I was like, yes. And then the Master just dancing, like, his life away. And then the Cyberman and the Dalek just turning to each other like, what? Like, the Doctor, she just accepts it at this point. But even the Daleks and the Cybermen, who feel no emotions, just going, what is this guy's problem?
So Master and Dalek looking at each other, let's go, what was going on was brilliant kind of comic timing. And again, Sacha Dhawan, just bring so much manic, crazed, psychopathic energy to that performance. It was great. And again, I loved every single scene with Sacha Dhawan's mask in this episode. I loved.
Yeah, and then obviously it's his main plot of like forced regeneration that actually makes 13 regenerate into him, which actually does track with this master, because if you think back to series 12, how he finds the timeless child and stuff, gets really angry, destroys Gallifrey and stuff, it feels like the next logical step for, well, the Doctor's the important one. The Doctor's what this has all been built on. And he also, the Master, just naturally hates himself, genuinely. And so to be like, well, I want to be the Doctor then.
Yeah, I think it was a natural extension of the storyline. The Master, you know, they've been rivals for years. They were friends and scholars, and then they became rivals. And then you had that kind of whole Moriarty and Sherlock Holmes vibe of the Third Doctor.
Mm. And like the Master's pretended to be the Doctor multiple times on TV and off.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And then you kind of got the idea of could the Master become the Doctor in a kind of good way. We see, I'm Doctor Who, the stuff in What World Enough in Time. And, you know, some great stuff there with, I like how the Master and Doctor relationship is so twisted, but ultimately it's about the Master's almost kind of like jealousy of the Doctor, which really plays into the timeless children. That's one thing that does work from there. And then here, the ultimate extension of that is becoming the Doctor itself. So I love the idea of the forced regeneration. Obviously, I think that plays into the Second Doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then a hint there, you know, other times as well. I think, you know, there's talk of, you know, were there more Doctors in that kind of period between Second and Third Doctor? That's always a...
Well, I think that's more referring to pre-Hartnell division stuff.
Or possibly that as well.
Or like Tectaeon experimenting, but yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, all that as well. But yes, seeing him in all the combination of all the Doctor outfits at once was so much fun.
Yeah, like I got 13's coat, apparently that was 10's tie, 7's jumper, 5's celery, 4's scarf. Trousers didn't quite get... but they were checked, so I presume they're one or two. I want to believe one, just because he already had part of two with the recorder.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, he just goes out on the planet, I did this, I'm the Doctor, ha ha ha. And then Yaz is like, no. Like, Yaz gets a lot in this episode. Like, the power of the Doctor is meant to be, like, what the Doctor inspires in people. When Yaz uses this to her advantage with people the Doctor knows and her friends to help bring 13 back.
Well, absolutely. Oh, this is the episode where I thought, finally, this is the Yaz that we've been building to.
Yeah,
I
she think, gets I... lots to do, especially as this is her last episode and she's been here the entirety of this era.
Mm. So, yeah, what do you think of Yaz's actions then? Immediately abandoned the Master on the kind of planet and flying off the TARDIS.
Yeah, it's like Yaz trying to fly the TARDIS and trying to talk to it. And the Master's like, yeah, she'll be back. I'm just going to play some recorder. Like, he is amazing.
But yeah, I think that's it. I think the one thing that probably wasn't really explored too much with Missy and John Sim's Master was a little bit with Martha Jones maybe, but the kind of the connection between the Master and the Companions. We saw that with the Master and Joe, and obviously the Master and Tegan and Nyssa.
Although Nyssa wasn't really on screen as it should have been.
Yeah, but he obviously he basically takes her father's body as his own. So
And then
there's a lot of stuff where the Master's relationship to the Companion to the Doctor has been as interesting as the Master's relationship with the Doctor. And again, with Yaz and the Master's relationship, this episode was very much coming back to that kind of classic Doctor Who era of the kind of, you know, the Yaz and the Master themselves are kind of playing this game as much as the Master and the Doctor.
Yeah, and it's like, as well, not only does the Master, like, the Doctor has companions, so I want a companion, but it does feel as well, the Master's lonely enough that he's like, I do want a companion. Like, look at the TV movie, and he gets his own mini companion for that. But yeah, I think he does that a few times on audio as well, tries to pick up a companion. It's like, he just wants to cause chaos, and like, we should just let him.
Yeah, that's it. And I thought Mandeep Gill, that kind of quiet rage he had when she was kind of, you know, the desperation of what the hell do I do now? And she has to kind of go along with the Master, but the first opportunity she gets, she kind of betrays him and then comes back to him. But she works tirelessly to defeat him at the same time.
Yep. Yeah. I love the callback as well to, like, with the AI she implanted. It's basically like Emergency Program 1, the thing the Ninth Doctor had in Parting of the Ways, like the hologram.
Oh, yes.
And I think Capaldi had it in Before the Flood, and Smith had it in Let's Kill Hitler, and a few Doctors have utilised it. But then just sort of have her own 13 trying to help her. And then she goes, well, okay, how do we do this? And obviously ends up calling in the Fugitive Doctor. I'm not quite sure how she knows that, because she mentioned last time I saw you, you were a tour guide, because she doesn't actually realise, but I guess she just tries to call in a doctor, and it...
Yeah. I mean, Joan Martin's scene was great again. Joan Martin's amazing, and I'd love to see more of her as well.
Yeah, her just storming into the building like, hello.
Yes.
And actually her and Sacha Dhawan getting to face off briefly.
That was great too.
They should do a crossover. They're Two Big Finish spin-offs now. Like, but, have...
they should do. Yeah, absolutely.
Welcome to the third age of podcasting.
The name of the podcast
is A Dream Given Form.
A show about J. Michael Straczynski's Babylon 5
for the We Made This podcast network.
Join us in 2022 as we look back at themes and ideas from across the show's history.
Today we're going to be discussing the three prominent leaders of Babylon 5. Sinclair, Sheridan and Delenn.
Everything from Earth and the Shadows and Minbari all the way through from early days of Season 1 all the way through to the Interstellar Alliance, and it's their legacy. Interstellar Alliance is really the legacy of these three characters. We are kind of going to potentially some scary territory here, looking at the parallels between Earth Force and Babylon 5 and the real world in which we live in now.
It is a really insidious way of doing things, and the more I think about it and the more I watch that scene and the way that Pierce speaks and talks about it, it really just fills me with chills, because, you know, our politicians do this all the time. They talk like this all the time, and they hide their true intention behind false promises. Current situation with the potential reboot of Babylon 5 for the CW network.
He's been involved in comic writing, he's been for Spider-Man, he's done shows like Sense8, which is very progressive as well. He's going to bring all that experience into the project, so I think it's going to be a very different show, and even some special guests too. Lita herself, Patricia Tallman.
I love hearing that people are still interested in Babylon 5, and, you know, it's really an honor to continue the conversation around a show that meant so much to us, and, you know, it was the little show that could.
Yeah.
And then in 2023, join us for the 30th anniversary of Babylon 5 as we start fortnightly lookbacks at the gathering in Season 1 and beyond.
So join us for A Dream Given Form.
Our last best hope for peace.
So, let's get on to the big one. The big one then, the Doctors. So, what did you think of that scene then? I mean, obviously, I watched it with you, so it's more for the listeners. What did you think of the scene when the Doctor's kind of in her own subconscious and she runs into the First Doctor?
Yeah, well, first off, I love the idea of, like, almost like the purgatory of passing through a generation with the old Doctors being there guarding it, and then once you pass through you become part of the guard to help, and the other Doctors going like, no, you can't do this, you need to go back. Maybe that's why there's never been a mid-episode regeneration. They're just like, no, we won't let you. Or something a bit like that in Scratchman, actually,
the Tom Baker novel.
Yeah, but like, to see with the robes, I was like, oh, figure, and then it like panned up and I was... And because of the rumours of David Bradley, Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy, and they were in Cardiff around this time last year, I fully expected, oh, yay, we're actually going to see McCoy. And then it was David Bradley, and I was like, oh, yay, okay.
Who was really good. I think there's been some criticism from some people of his performance as the First Doctor. And I can see that. I liked his performance. I've liked his Big Finish work as well. But I guess some ways it almost occasionally felt like a bit of a caricature of the First Doctor. I thought the First Doctor in this episode was his best he's ever done it.
Fair enough. Yeah, he also looked really Hartnell-esque this time as well.
Yeah.
But in the robes, and then it switches to Colin Baker, and it's like, yay! And especially considering Colin, obviously, he was fired. He was blacklisted by the BBC, so then to finally allow him back.
Yeah, I love that they got Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy, because particularly as Colin Baker, bless him, does not look like he did when he played Doctor. I mean, they're all aged, but the way they managed to do it with this kind of slight dreamlike sequence and have them playing a Doctor while being able to get away with them being aged as well was great.
Yeah, and then obviously, I think after Colin Baker, it was Davison, and that was a big surprise. I was like, oh, they got Davison here too. Lovely. And then I think McCoy was the last one, and I expected him. But after Davison, when it switches, and I think most of the fandom just collectively screamed, like, I didn't actually out loud, mainly because my vocal cords don't allow me to do that. But like internally, I was like, oh my.
Yeah.
See, that's the kind of screamy noise.
It was amazing.
Just to see Paul McGann back again. And also, someone pointed out, this is technically his first appearance in the main show. Because he had the movie and a mini-sode. He's not actually been in, like, the main comes yet.
Yeah.
Also, just a lovely joke I saw on Twitter afterwards. Breaking news. Big Finish cover artist saved for the next 5 years. Paul McGann reference material.
Because, Paul McGann is amazing on Big Finish. Some of the best stuff on Big Finish is the Paul McGann stuff. We talked about it last year. And
also next month.
we're going to be talking about more Big Finish next month as well. But that's not a tangent, that's a future episode.
Timey-wimey.
Very timey-wimey. But, yeah, Paul McGann is so good. And it's a tragedy that we haven't had more of him. And I think, of all the Doctors, the fact that he was in his own outfit, and he was very, very determined to be his own thing and not be the Doctor of the robes, and he brought such presence and character to those few brief scenes. I think he was amazing. And I'm once again complaining we desperately need more Paul McGann on Doctor Who.
Yeah, like Chibnall getting away with getting Paul McGann back is like a lot of. There was another meme I saw which was like Chris Chibnall just going, I brought Paul McGann back, and then it cuts like the Thanos image. Perhaps I treated you too harshly. Because it's like Paul McGann and I. For me, Davison, though apparently Davison was also slightly rumoured, which I guess makes sense with Janet Fielding being here, that was the complete surprise. Like, 1, 6 and 7 and Fugitive, I kind of assumed slash hoped.
Mm-hmm.
But 5 and 8 is like, oh my god, like, to get Paul McGann there as well. And yeah, what you're saying, him in the costume, 13's like, no, hold on, why are you in there? I'm not a robes guy. And then 7 going, ugh, there always has to be one. And then 8 just is like, I am a manifestation of our consciousnesses. I can wear what I like.
Yeah, it was great. Paul McGann was amazing. It's interesting that you said actually that the mini episode that you did Night of the Doctor for the 50th isn't part of the main show, and obviously TV movies is very much its own thing. So yeah, it's interesting that this is his first actual TV appearance. I really hope it's not the last.
Yeah, I mean, he's been referenced in the main TV show before. Obviously, the minisode was part of the 50th. Like, I think he was first properly referenced in Family of Blood in the diary John Smith wrote.
Yes, he was.
He was, like, the face there, but...
Because there was a period of time when it was... Is he actually... I think until that David Tennant episode in Series 3, that whether he was actually canon or not, I think.
Yeah, but... I mean, it was just amazing seeing back, like, all the old Doctors. It's perfect, like, great celebration of the classic show with those companions and some of the others we'll mention later. But Paul McGann in particular is just, like, that is on most of fans' wish lists.
Mm.
And, like, Paul McGann said a while back, like, a few months ago, when someone asked about the 60th, and he was like, oh, yeah, well, if they call, I'm there. So, and obviously, he meant that, but it was also being really deceptive. And another thing I remember seeing was like a month or so ago, someone at a convention with McCoy, and someone just going, oh, so you've met Jodie? Yes. Is that a leak? Have you just mentioned you're in the centenary? And McCoy's just like, no. It's like, rule one, the Doctor lies.
So, what about the, we're jumping around a bit then, talking about the old Doctors.
Yes.
What about the scenes when the interactive program interacts with Ace and Tegan? So let's talk about Tegan and the Fifth Doctor first.
Yeah, that was great. Like, to see 13 pop up. Like, 13 popping up with her AI, obviously. And, like, yay. And then suddenly glitches. Oh, of course, your memory takes over. And it's like, Peter Davison's back in costume.
Yeah.
And then Peter Davison, Janet Fielding, like, right off the bat. You're almost the same, but not quite what I remember. Well, I could say the same to you.
I loved, again... Where was this Chris Chibnall on other episodes? Because the work he was doing here as well, we like, it was a proper epilogue to Resurrection of the Daleks. You know, she left because of all the violence, and she ran away, and then felt like the Doctor kind of abandoned her as well. And dealing with that, the reason she's so hostile to the 13th Doctor is because of what happened. And the fact that they have this cathartic moment together, the Fifth Doctor and Tegan, when they can talk through and kind of find forgiveness and find a kind of understanding again, was lovely, lovely to watch. And this is the point, this is just after her speech to Kate when the unit headquarters being attacked by the Cybermen. And this was the moment where I thought really we're starting to get actual Tegan, and where Janet Fielden was really starting to find her feet with the performance as well. And I thought, yeah, Davison and Fielden were great together.
Yeah, it's interesting that Tegan was the more hostile one to the Doctor, considering that Seven put Ace through. Want to quickly then finish on like the, well, how do I know you're actually the Doctor? And it's like, Cybermen, what am I thinking of now? And he's just like, well, Adric.
Mm.
And then it's just like, oh. Like, even saying that now, there's just goosebumps. Like, thinking, then he's like, Braveheart.
Yeah,
then,
oh yeah. All those moments, yeah, from the Fifth Doctor.
Like,
era.
Honestly. And I know they all look great in costume. I think, weirdly, Davison fits it a bit more than McCoy, just based on that. But, like, Davison really still rocks the costume.
He does. Well, I mean, he came back for Time Crash, which is actually quite a few years ago now.
Yeah, it's like
15 years ago now, yeah.
Like, I saw another thing on Twitter afterwards, like, an image of, like, Colin Bates, Vesta McCoy and Peter Davison, like, in their celebratory wine from the Five-ish Doctors, and just with the caption, they've done it, lads. Like, they have managed. And then, like, as soon as that was there, I was like, oh, right, well, we have to get Ace and Seven now, right? And it cut to Ace and 13 popped up, and I was like, here we go. And then, boom, Seven, yeah. You hear his voice. It's interesting that Ace is the one apologising, really. I didn't understand what you were doing, when really, Seven should have been the one really to apologise.
Yeah, but I kind of liked... I don't think that Ace in the story necessarily contradicts the whole stuff with the Charitable Earth stuff and that.
No.
I think that's all what could still have happened before the reform of UNIT. But I like how we kind of get the explanation of why she left, that actually his meddling went too far, and whether that was not long after Survival or much later on, I don't think we really know, do we, at what point. But obviously, Ace is manipulated by the Doctor a lot during her two seasons on the show, and I like, again, how that was the impetus for her to leave the TARDIS, and again, this scene was about them kind of coming together again.
Hmm. I know Chibnall's referenced it in interviews, but obviously, just for, like, general audience terms, he had to ignore At Childhood's End with 13, Yaz, Graham, Ryan and Ace, obviously, in this. But, equally, I think that mentions, like, Ace's multiple futures, and that still does tie in with her leaving here, like, Seven manipulates Ace one too far, and she leaves him. But, yeah, it was really nice, and then for Seven to just go, we're Ace.
Yes, absolutely. I'm just saying, again, about the... What I loved, these were actual scenes addressed the fallout of their departures from the show. Obviously, Ace was off screen because Survivor, her last episode, which we discussed, was when the show was cancelled. So she wasn't there when the TV movie happened. But I like, again, great, great work from Chibnall here with the script and with the performances from all the kind of former Doctors and companions. Just dealing with the catharsis of coming together again and reconciling over the trauma of what happened in the past. And the Doctor kind of, you know, I was basically like her parent and kind of guiding her. And it was just, it was a lovely scene. Again, McCoy and Aldred were wonderful together. I mean, they've been doing Big Finish for years. They're still good friends. They have great chemistry. They're not in conventions together. So there's that certainly. But again, on screen, it was just magic.
And especially for like classic Who fans, there was like a 5 in 8 chance you got to see your favourite Doctor again in that episode.
Like, absolutely.
Apparently as well, it was mentioned today, as of recording, it's the Monday after, that Tom Baker was invited to take part, but he couldn't. Like, whether that's relocation or the fact he's, like, 89, and honestly, recently he's not looked hugely well.
I mean,
like,
he is getting
on. Massive weight loss recently, and he looks a bit unhealthy.
Well, I mean, he is getting on. He's still doing his Big Finish off. But to be honest, I mean, I hope he's okay. But we had a wonderful Tom Baker scene in the 50th special. So if that's all we've got with Tom Baker again, that's great. Again, if it's all we've got now, if this is the last we'll ever see of McCoy, of Colin Baker, of Peter Davison, and of Tom Baker, then we've had some lovely scenes with them in the show.
Yeah, I think Tom, Peter and Sylvester especially. Colin, I wish we may see one more time just so he properly gets one, because he's relegated to just being in the sort of voidy area.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see him again, like, especially considering Bonnie Langford was here as well. So
she was, yeah. So is there maybe in the future, but obviously more McGann, yes.
Oh yeah, always want Paul Moore McGann. No, more Paul McGann. Oh well, still, that is like so many fans' wishes.
Yeah. Ticked. So what did you think of the whole attack on the unit headquarters and the return of Asher, the lone Cyberman?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. Serviceable enough. Like the idea, the tissue compression eliminator can reverse, but clones them. It was quite Genesis arc-y from Doomsday, like it opening and all of them coming out.
Yeah, that was quite cool. I really liked Asher the Lone Cybermen in the Haunting of Viridiardati, and I thought, and I guess Ascension of the Cybermen as well. You know, there was some. He was a good villain for then. I kind of felt this was very much a muted. Oh, you remember him? He was quite cool. Let's bring him back, because he didn't really have the same kind of menace and personality as such that he had in those episodes. It was more they'd again just have a callback to an old character, but. Again, the Cybermen were good. I thought it was a good scene. I loved Ace jumping off the top and him going back and helping Kate and again her speech when she came back to see Kate as well. It was just a lots of kind of shooting and fighting, but it was good. It was some good action. I thought the most effective stuff though were when the soldiers were being cyber converted, and just kind of that horror and screams. Very much remind me again of Doomsday from Series 2.
Army of Ghosts and Doomsday,
When the unit people were being converted in that one as well. Again, very much a callback to that storyline.
Yeah, I also love when Ace is like jumping off and Asher just sees her and he's like, no, and just shoots down the parachute. It's very like Day of the Moon when River jumps off the building and lands in the TARDIS. Like,
yes.
And like, it's even more impressive that Yaz and Vindo were the ones to properly... Obviously, they might have had AI 13 to tell them what to do, but she very much seems to be learning. She has like her sticky notes in the book in the
I love that
panel. Like, how to do this, and the Master Doctor's like, oh, this is cute. But then, like, obviously, when we get 13 back, it's great to see her quickly in the mishmash of outfits and like...
Yeah.
And Joe Martin obviously pops up. Like, her outfit was very striking against that as well.
Yeah, again, we've only heard little tidbits of Joan Martin's Doctor, but she's always great whenever she's on screen. Again, it was a really great, great scene with Martin there as well. What do you think of the return of Graham then?
See, Graham also was known because filming image with him and John Bishop, but that was like from the ending scene in the park. So when he actually turned up in the volcano, that genuinely did surprise me. Like, oh, he's here now.
Yeah, and it was fun.
I know a lot of people are taking issue. Why is he in a volcano when... It does make sense. It was explained in Revolution of the Daleks. They were going to go off and investigate things. The main issue is, how did Graham even get into a volcano? Because, like, there's not going to be a door to a volcano. And even if there was, the only guards that would be there, because there probably would be guards, would be Daleks. And it's like, they're not going to be fooled. So he got in there somehow.
There are some plots, like how when, obviously, Tegan seemed to fall to her death, and then she was fine.
Well, it seems like she... went slid down the ladder. I don't know. Maybe it was the AI 13 manifesting, like,
I don't
save
know.
Her.
Yeah.
Also, there was that shot in the TARDIS of, like, 13 and her face glitching over the others.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah. But I loved, as much as it maybe doesn't really make sense while Graham was there, I think, again, Graham and Ace together was a lot of fun and almost maybe a little bit of chemistry with them as well, between them as well.
I love how Graham totally fancied Ace there.
He did, yeah. He absolutely did. And there was definitely a spark between them as well. But yeah, it was fun. And obviously seeing Ace in that jacket with the bat as well was just so much fun.
Yeah, and Kate being like, oh, very 80s.
Yeah, so obviously, what about Kate's last stand as well then, you know, against Cybermen?
I mean, she didn't do a whole lot. It's a thing, Chip... It's weird. Considering Chibnall created her character, because she first appeared in Power of Three...
Oh, she did, yeah.
He, Moffat, still did the best stuff with her. But I guess there are a lot... There is a lot to do here, and you're going to have to sideline one or two.
Yeah.
Which actually... Sorry, just weird thing I just forgot to mention earlier, is why I think the use of the classic Doctors really works. They do it in a time... where 13's not around. So it, rather than infringing on her actions, they have their space and then 13 has all of her stuff.
Yeah, I love that, yeah. I think you're right. I think it's probably better. She had better stuff here than in Flux. I didn't particularly like the whole thing going on the running flux. It just didn't really make a huge amount of sense to me. It felt like it was setting up for the Power of the Doctor. But no, she was good. She has gumption, go up against the Cybermen and sacrificing herself. I generally thought she was going to die at that point. And obviously Tegan saves her day as well. So that was all cool. So yeah, when the Doctor then returns after they're able to reverse the
forced regeneration.
Forced regeneration into a degeneration, then, I guess. You said you loved Jodie Whittaker in the kind of multi-Doctor costume.
Yeah, and like, again, that was thought because there were rumours Jodie would wear all the old Doctor's costumes. Like, when the mask, I was like, oh, cool. But then, like, Jodie mentioned in an interview, Tom Baker's scarf is very heavy. And people were like, oh, she's speaking from experience. And yes, she is. But yeah, I guess when you get down to it, it's then, like, 13 and her friends versus the Master, because you, like, get them all in the TARDIS in very Journey's End style.
Very much so, yeah.
Lovely to see Tegan and Ace in it as well. Like, Ace being like, ooh, I like this.
And Kate going, how is it bigger on the inside?
Because, yeah, you know what? That tracks, because not only is it like, wait, Kate's never been in the TARDIS? You've got to remember as well, the Brigadier never was in it until the Three Doctors.
Yes.
And he was like, oh, so this is what we're spending money on. So actually, it attracts them.
Yeah, I get a little callbacks. If a bit of Three Doctors, bit of Journey's End as well. Okay, there were a lot of stuff in this episode where you could probably go, oh, that's like this episode, that's like that episode. But I think that was kind of the point of the Power of the Doctor.
It very much was. Like, it was meant to be a celebration. It very much was Chris Chibnall going, well, you know what? Moffat got the 50th. RTD's back and he's doing the 60th. I want to do one. And here's an excuse. Let's just start the 60th early. Why not?
Yeah.
No one will be mad. And boom, here we are. I also love the Master's TARDIS just having like the sign on the doors just laughing. That's like a very Master thing
that,
to do.
That was very, very cool as well, yeah. So what do you think of the Doctor's resolution, what was happening to it, how to kind of tie everything up and save the Earth from this kind of volcanic apocalypse?
Yeah, I guess it worked. Like, using the cyber planet, I think, helped in the Kronk? Was that what, like, the weird energy ball child was?
Oh, yeah, yes, ball child, yes.
No, don't call it a ball child.
No. ball child, yes.
Energy child.
Energy child, that's it.
Yeah, I think it pretty much worked. Very 13th Doctor just run around, fix it all, and be like, and be like, and now we're done. And then she thinks it's all good, off. She goes walking back to the TARDIS, and then the Master just appearing like, well, if I can't be you, you can't be you. And then, like, because I was wondering, oh, well, how is she actually going to regenerate that? And it was kind of brutal. Like, just proper, full-on energy, like sentient energy laser just shooting her and shooting her flying across the rocky landscape. It was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, it was quite dramatic. I mean, it needed to be something quite big, I think, to do that. I just assumed that kind of the false degeneration was going to then trigger the regeneration. But yeah, so I guess that was the kind of the cool twist of it. Actually, she managed to degenerate back into herself, and then it's fine again, only for the Master to kind of, you know, unleash that kind of power beam against her.
Yeah, and then the Master dies. Again, he'll be back. He's the
he'll
Master.
I think Sacha Dhawan said he's done, but then I guess unless there's another Master in the 60th or the Shuti Gatwa Doctor Who, then, yeah, I mean, for all he knows, now this is his last appearance on the show.
He has said if Russell calls him back up, he might do it.
Yeah, I think he's great. I mean, I would love Missy and this Master together to see how that worked, to see how they connect, because obviously there's one thing we don't have is what happened between, assuming he is the Master that follows Missy, what happened? Because obviously something changed there to go back into the full manic, vengeful Master that we've had. But I would love to see them both together. You know, again, maybe Johnson was Master, maybe even the War Master, because Derek Jacobi is amazing as the War Master. There you go. Have a multi-Master story.
I mean, I will say the Lumiat, Big Finish, they're on our side. And actually, I think the Timeless Child does kind of make sense why the Master goes back into this, but like he's all good. Oh, wait, the Doctor's this big figurehead. That just sends him a bit mad. But I mean, now Sacha Dhawan is doing Big Finish, although he has been doing it for a few years now anyway.
Mm.
And Michelle Gomez does it. We could get the two of them together because they've done multi-Master stories on there.
They have,
they
did
like Eric Roberts, Michelle Gomez and Derek Jacobi together. Actually, scratch that, they did Masterful.
Yes, they did.
Obviously. Even got, like, the Unbound Master. And then that shot of like Yaz running out and carrying 13.
That was amazing. That was great. I mean, I think that kind of was, of all the moments that Yaz had in this episode, it was Yaz carrying the Doctor back, that kind of really heroic moment there.
Yeah, and then all the, like, all the faces she sees, and they're like, it's weird, like, had Yaz not ended up in the support group, all the companions would have just had to hope the Doctor was okay, because she drops them all off, but, I guess that's the tragedy of it. They fix it all, it's fine, but then that one blast, that actually means she does have to die. She thought she beat the prophecy, a bit like Tennant thought he beat his, she's no longer erased. But then the one glowy hand. I love how she has the glowy hand, like, while eating the ice cream as well.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, I think that, again, both of those scenes were some of the best stuff we've had with Yaz and the 13th Doctor. The scene when she realises she's going to die and she's talking to Yaz and saying, kind of, this is the end. And let's have one last adventure, one last ice cream. You know, again, Mandy Gill's performance was really good, but actually Jodie Whittaker's performance was absolutely fantastic in this episode. With scenes like that, I think, where they're just kind of holding it back. She's always holding back the regeneration. Yeah, she's kind of holding back the tears. It's kind of just, you know, having that final moment and coming to terms with what's happening was very bittersweet. And I got to say, I mentioned before, I love the scene when they're sat on the TARDIS with the ice creams. It was a lovely final moment for them.
Yeah. Again, something has come up before, like in Listen, for example. How did they even get up there? Like
some kind of gravity well, like, thing, maybe.
I know it's basically commonplace now for each Doctor to get some sort of scene like that, because the 11th Doctor, you had Brian sitting there watching Earth with the sandwiches. Listen, you had Capaldi meditating on top, and now you have this. But it's like with Yaz being like, I don't want to go, but then 13, like, the Doctor's just like, I want to do this alone, and Yaz just has to accept it, knowing, well, they've already come to terms with the fact this just won't last, so she has to go, which is interesting. We've never really had a companion ousted out because of regeneration before, other than Jamie and Zoe, but they're a bit of a different circumstance.
Yeah.
Like, Yaz has to go because the Doctor's changing and she wants to go through that alone, which is interesting, because 13 really liked her fam, but at the same time, she was so closed off, it kind of makes sense she wants to do this on her own and go into the next one.
Yeah, I mean, she always, I think that's the point with the 13th Doctor, she surrounds herself with the fam. She gets the proper fam in this episode with the old classic companions.
And
as well,
the Master, that's his extended fam, which is just vicious aliens.
Yes. But ultimately, she's always quite isolated. She, as much as she wants to have this fam, she's always quite reserved. And she, there's a kind of nice moment when Graham and Yaz kind of reunite, and he says, she's still keeping secrets then. She's still doing what she's always done and keeping things, even from Yaz, who she's closest to now. And it's kind of a reflection that as much as she wanted to connect with her fam, there's always a bit of the Doctor that's kind of has taken a step back from them as well. So it kind of, it does feel understandable that she does want to do the regeneration on her own.
Yeah, especially as Yaz keeps trying to get the information, but no. I can imagine that scene where Graham's like, oh, yeah, she's still doing it. Ace just standing in the background thinking, oh, if only you knew. But yeah, and then that last scene, obviously, with the companion support group. Yeah, as I said earlier, Graham, like, that great idea. But then when we got to Graham talking, and I was like, okay, there's going to be some old ones here. Who are we going to get? Instantly, Katie Manning's laugh, knew it immediately.
Oh, yeah.
Heard it, and I was like, oh, Joe! And then it cut to the moon, and it was like, oh, Mel, and old man. Oh, my God. Like, I've been saying for a while, the 60th is realistically the last chance at Ian. William Russell is 97, apparently he was 95 when he recorded this. He's outlived Queen Elizabeth II. Like, he was born before her.
Yeah.
By, like, a year. And
it was lovely to have Ian. I mean, I know Joe and Mel and Ian only got one line each in that scene, yes. But it was lovely to get. I mean, yeah, that's all we'll get of Ian. But I think it was lovely, and it was great to see all these old companions together.
Yeah, especially apparently this is also like the first time Mel's actually had a surname confirmed in the credits, because Bush was just one given to her in the expanded universe. So,
okay.
But the thing with Ian as well, I can imagine when he's just like, huh? Yeah, fine, I'll accept it. Because this doesn't disprove the fact that the comic where he did meet Eleven and him and Barbara got married. Although it is quite sad, because apparently it was said, like, he had a bit of a panic like before recording, and Sophie Aldred had calmed him down, and then he was a bit forgetful, so I think it was Bradley Walsh who had to explain to him exactly what he was doing in the scene. So This really does show this is the last time we're going to see Ian. But honestly, because he's a frail old man, apparently forgetful a bit.
His age, but the fact that he is the original companion, he is one of the very first three original companions on the show. It's great to have him back.
And you know what I learned earlier? William Russell technically beating the current holder by 14 years should get the title of Guinness World Record for longest time between appearances on a TV show of the same character. And Apparently Guinness World Records are actually looking into it. So there we are. William Russell outlived the Queen and likely going to get a Guinness World Record.
Oh, that's amazing.
Like, he is a treasure. And like, it's a really good thing Katie Manning, Paul McGann and William Russell were only cameos, because otherwise the entire fandom would have just exploded with the power of the three of them together.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was a lovely scene. And again, this is why I think maybe there's Russell had a hand in this. The fact that, again, Casey's, I'll probably recruit some of you as well. I mean, maybe, don't think Ian, but Joe certainly, and maybe Mel as well. They could also turn up, and maybe some other companions too. So the final scene, the regeneration scene then. One thing I quite liked about it is we didn't actually know we were shooting at what David Tennant we were going to see.
Blossom, yes, blossom. That's the only sad thing. I want to know what happens next. Right then. Doctor, whoever I'm about to be. Tag. You're it.
First off, like, the visual in 13's last lines were great.
Oh,
like,
her final lines, yeah. I was, you know, let's talk about Jodie Whittaker's kind of final moments then.
The regeneration effect looked really nice. And then to have, like, her original theme, which we haven't really heard properly since Series 11, just blast as she's regenerating feels really nice.
That was lovely, yes. And, yeah, lovely final lines from her. And
it's a very much 13th Doctor line, like, wanting to know what happens next, and then, like, tag.
Yes, yeah, it was great.
And then, like, obviously, watching regeneration, it's like, right, who's it going to be? Oh, that looks Tennant-y. As soon as the clothes started, I was like, yep, Tennant.
Well, that was interesting. The fact that the clothes changed, that does not normally happen.
Oh, I love when people are saying it's a brand new thing when actually production errors just meant the first Doctor's clothes were generated too, between 10th Planet and Power of the Daleks.
Ah.
But yeah. I mean, that might be explained because he's really surprised. And then his first lines basically being his old first lines, like, no, hold on, these teeth. And then obviously his signature, what's like, it had to end on that, didn't it?
It was great. It was wonderful to see David Tennant back, and I am really excited for what's going to come next.
And RTD has referred to Shutagawa as the 15th, which means David Tennant is officially the 14th.
So he's not a degenerated 10th Doctor, he is the 14th Doctor.
Yes, whether he acts the same as 10, we don't know yet. But he seems like a Mayfly Doctor of 14. And, yeah, as they've mentioned in the press release, three specials November next year, which is very annoying.
So quite a while to wait then.
I thought they'd be over the course of the year, but then they did say Shootagatwa, first episode, festive period of 2023, which makes me think three specials in November for David Tennant's 14, and then Shootagatwa debuts as 15 in a Christmas special.
Wow, amazing.
That's my thought on that.
Cool.
We may as well talk about the trailer briefly.
Yep.
Very short, but I quite liked it. Neil Patrick Harris looked quite sinister, actually. Just his waving, like the hello.
Yes.
But obviously, I think the main... It's the end of the trailer, that really...
We actually get to see Shudigatwa's doctor, yes.
Which I did not expect. I was like, oh, cool. And when the trailer ended, I was like, wait, who's that guy at the end? Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Which makes me think, the costume he was wearing, like the shirt and the tie, that looks very much like 14's clothes. So I think that's actually... post-regeneration from 14, and that's all he's filmed so far, because he's meant to start filming next month.
Right.
Series 14. I could be wrong, maybe he has filmed a bit more, but as it stands, I think that's the case, because if you look at 14's outfit, the tie looks the same.
Okay, so that's all we've got to come forward to next year. Let's just kind of spend 5 minutes then just wrapping up our thoughts on the 13th Doctor era then. So it's had its ups and downs. I think we both agreed that it actually ended very strongly.
Yeah, very much so, which they deserved it, honestly. Especially with all, like, the bile and stuff they've been getting through the fandom. They deserve to go out on an episode that actually loads of people really enjoyed and give them credit for. Like, I've seen, like, comments like, Chibnall, you've outdone yourself here.
Yeah, again, it's like, where was Chibnall? Where was this Chibnall all along? Because maybe because it was a celebratory spectacle or not, but it just had the first half of the episode. I say kind of felt very flux. It was jumping around lots and stuff didn't quite make sense. But then when it came to go in the second half, you know, some truly great stuff there.
Yeah, and honestly, it's been a long era. Longest of the revival, I believe, 5 years as a Doctor. So if we ignore Paul McGann's weirdness and stick McCoy just 87 to 89, like, don't count the time he was the current one until the movie.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he'd win with 9 years. You have Tom Baker longest with 7, and then it's actually Jodie Whittaker and John Pertwee both on 5 years each.
Wow. I mean, obviously, there's been issues with COVID, which might have delayed things as well, and condensed flux, but...
She's only had 31 episodes.
Yeah, it's not that long, is it?
I know, like... 10 episodes in 2018, 1 in 19,
10, 20.
Yes, 7 in 21 and 3 in 22.
Yeah, so not that many. So, I mean, is The Power of the Doctor the best episode of the 13th Doctor era?
As it stands, like, I haven't rewatched it, but I've digested for about a day. And I think I'd say it's my favourite, but best... Plot-wise, maybe not. Best, I'd probably give to something like Rosa or War of the Sontarans, I think.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, I kind of have to watch it again. It's the higher the spectacle. I think it's definitely the top five, because it's probably what I enjoy. It's certainly the one I enjoy the most.
So, yeah, I think it is my favourite, but maybe not the best.
Yeah, I think call it my favourite. It Takes You Away, Demons of Punjab... And Rosa from the first series. I think Nikola Tesla's Night of Terror and Haunted Villa Diodati from the second series. And then probably, yeah, War of the Sontarans and Village of the Angels. And then this one, I think. That's the ones that spring to mind as my favourites.
Yeah, I'd probably say Rosa, Kablam, and It Takes You Away, because I didn't love Demons of the Punjab as much as other people, but it's still very good. Series 12 is probably Tesla, Fugitive, and Haunting. And then, yeah, like, the rest of them are Sontarans, Angels, and this. Because I don't think any of the other specials reach those heights.
No, I don't think he did. Maybe Witchfinders. I quite like Witchfinders, too. That's a very Rusty Davies type one.
We may as well, considering going favourites, just post-mortem of the entire era, least favourite episode?
Ooh, I don't know. A lot of people are saying Legends of the Sea Devils. Sea Devils, I kind of still enjoy bits of it. Maybe just the battle of whatever that was called, the finale of the first series.
Rand Square of Colossus. To be fair, it was a first draft script.
And it showed. I think that and maybe All for 55 as well was pretty weak as well.
Yeah, I'd probably say it was Praxeus for a while, but I rewatched that like earlier this year and enjoyed it a bit more. So it's either that or Suranga Conundrum, I think.
Yeah, for me. Fair enough then. So finally, the story arcs and the Timeless Children arc. we never got any kind of follow-up to her. That was really frustrating. All that kind of build-up in flux, and then she just puts the fob watch down the TARDIS drain where it was and just left it. I mean, that for me is really frustrating. You build the... You didn't need to answer everything, but you built this big mystery, and then you go, no, we're not going to answer it. I mean, that was particularly frustrating for me.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Chibnall couldn't fully go through with it because COVID obviously condensed the plans and stuff.
And like, I don't think it's an excuse enough because we've had three episodes since then as well to do something with it.
Yeah, and one of the reviews I've watched of this episode earlier today on YouTube mentioned something like Chibnall probably made the right call in going, well, I'm not going to try and just do a checklist to tie these up. Let's do something else. And this is definitely better than what we would have got otherwise.
Yeah, you're probably white as well.
The only old Doctor I could see returning other than Fugitive if he had done a checklist, maybe McCoy, because it makes sense. Seven might have just known about this and eight immediately forgot after his regeneration because eight is a very forgetful boy.
Quite possibly. And I think again, the TARDIS children, I quite like the idea of the TARDIS children as itself. The whole destruction of Gallifrey again felt completely just shat over the whole kind of hopeful return of Gallifrey and Daily Doctor. But yeah, you know, we talked about it on our previous podcast we have on the 13th Doctor. But it was generally a weaker era compared to the Rossi Davis and Moffat eras of Doctor Who. But there were some moments. Jodie Whittaker was good, and I think she should have had better scripts than she had, because Jodie Whittaker could have been really, really good. And I think Power of the Doctor showed how good she could be.
Yeah, I think as it stands, again, currently she's my least favourite. But I do want to hear more of her when eventually she does Big Finish, because it's likely she will.
Yeah.
And in terms of, like, just the surrounding material for this era, like, she's not been done very well either. Like, the book range basically just stopped after 2018. She's had a couple of mini ones. Comics have basically just been infested with the 10th Doctor appearing. Time Lord Victorious was during her era, for example, and like that was big takeover. I think her Doctor Who magazine comic run has apparently ended now, which is surprising. They usually continued that Doctor right up until the next one. She had Redacted, which was quite good as a spin-off. I know you haven't heard that.
Mm.
But Whittaker was actually really, really good in the final episode of that.
Yeah. So I think in some ways I kind of view it was a bit of a missed opportunity. It was great that we had a female Doctor and we brought some diversity and change to the show. Again, adore Tasha Dewan's Master. I thought he was one of the best things about it. But there's a lot of, yeah, the writing was not quite up to scratch what it needs to be. But at least it ended high, and I think you'll agree. Power of the Doctor at least ended the 13th Doctor on a high.
Yeah, I say that. Not a drug high, but...
No.
But yeah, Jodie Whittaker and Chris Chibnall have obviously loved their time on the show as well. They seem to be, like, really nice people, and they haven't deserved, like, the backlash they've got to this.
No, absolutely not. And I think it's a shame, because you almost feel a bit awkward kind of criticising the show, given the backlash against it. And it's actually, I think that there's a different size between the quality of the writing that we've had and those fans who attack the Doctor Who for being too woke, or because it's a female Doctor and all that stuff, which we talked about before, and we're not going to get into, because... We essentially don't have time for that, but...
Yeah, Chibnall, like, made a statement the other day about it, basically saying, like, it's the world that's changed, not the show.
Absolutely.
Deal with it, essentially, which... Yeah, he's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great statement from Chibnall there. So, brilliant. So that comes to the end of our discussion on The Power of the Doctor. Moving forward on the TARDIS crew, because Ben has A-levels now and is quite busy, we are moving to a monthly format rather than fortnightly. So next month, we are looking at the 6th Doctor at Big Finish, and then we'll be doing our Doctor Who Christmas special, looking at a Christmas episode in December. And then next year, we're going full on with the 60th anniversary and the return of Rossi Davis by looking at all the anniversary specials of Doctor Who, everything from the Three Doctors to Dimensions in Time. And we're going to look at a lot of the Rossi Davis era of Doctor Who. We're going to look at the Christopher Eccleston and David Tennant series. We're going to look at some other work, like some Sarah Jane, Tortured Children of Earth. We're going to look at kind of some wider stuff around his era as well, leading up to the new specials in November 2023.
Yeah, and got some good guests lined up as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Lots of guests coming on. So we are moving to monthly, but with some good content coming off. So yeah, so that comes to the end of this episode. You can find us on Twitter at PrueTARDIS and on Instagram at the TARDIS Crew. And you can find Ben at
BenGreenland06.
And myself at BazGreenland on Twitter too. So thanks for joining us for this episode. And remember, we are part of the We Made This podcast network. Please subscribe to the TARDIS Crew and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd really love to hear your thoughts and hopefully get some new listeners onto the podcast too. Next time, we will look at redemption of the Sixth Doctor at Big Finish. So join us again for the TARDIS Crew, because somewhere there's danger, somewhere there's injustice, somewhere else the tea's getting cold.